Mishnas, Ishes of the Levaya. Okay. I'd like to address Ishes of the Levaya and Ishes of Beis HaKvaros, both from a halachic, hashkafic, and a pragmatic point of view. We talk about the Levaya or Kvura. The idea of a Kvura itself is something which requires a certain amount of thought and a certain amount of contemplation. On the one hand, there is a very clear, or seemingly a clear mitzvah for kvura. It says explicitly in Sefer Devarim, it talks about a person who has been stoned and hanged. It says, Lo talin nivato al ha'etz, don't let him stay hanging on the tree, ki kavar tikberenu bayom hahu. It's a mitzvah, ki kilad, it's a mitzvah to bury the corpse that very same day. The reason given, ki kilat elokim toloi, having the body hanging is a disgrace to God. Therefore, in that particular case, there is an explicit mitzvah that there is a requirement to bury the mace that same day. The Gemara in Masechet Sanhedrin, Daf Mem Vav, derives from this the mitzvah of kvura in general, whether it's a chiyuv, absolute chiyuv, gomer min haTorah, it's a remez chiyuv kvura, whereas two different lashonos. But in any case, there is a source in the pasuk of the idea of kvura. Along with that explicit pasuk directive, ki kavar tikberenu, if we go way, way back to Bereishis, to Adam HaRishon, to the Chetz Eid Hadat, where man was punished with the concept of death, right? We have the idea, ki afar ata, ve'el afar tashuv. Right? The idea of kura is ultimately a recognition that the body, the man, is comprised of two parts, of a guf, and of a neshama, and given the state of the world, the state of sin that we currently live in, this existence, the neshama, is eternal. So perhaps, interesting to think, before the Chet of Eitz Hadas, perhaps Adam would also presumably have been eternal in his human form. Therefore, the same way that the neshama would endure forever, presumably the body, which is the house, right, is this house, the dwelling for the neshama, may also have endured forever. The person may not have died, and it continues. However, once the element of sin entered the world, an idea of death was decreed upon Adam, so therefore the idea of the neshama, despite the sin, does continue eternally. Whereas the guf, right, the guf doesn't continue eternally, and therefore the guf ki afar ata, vel afar tashuv. Now that the guf is separated and is distinct from the neshama, so the guf returns back, the neshama returns to its source, the Kodesh Baruch Hu, tach lekisei hakavod, and the guf also returns to its source, and that is afar ata, vel afar tashuv. The guf returns back to its source and down to the ground. We find in the concept of mitzvah of kvura, Yaakov also tells his children, "Vasisa imadi chesed ve'emes al natrik ve'er mitzrayim." The Chazal just, what's the idea of chesed ve'emes? What's the idea of chesed and truth? They explain that a chesed done with a dead person is considered chesed shel emes, and that a person doesn't expect to get any sense of return, any return. Normally, a person does a favor to someone, he expects to get something back in return. You lend something to the neighbor, there's a hidden expectation, not necessarily explicit, but there's often understanding that today I'll lend you, tomorrow you'll lend me back. A person needs help with a tzedakah, now we're in a position to help you. At some point they maybe need things to be reversed. So therefore, there's always the idea of chesed, the idea of kvura is something in which we have chesed, but chesed with the mace is considered chesed shel emes in the sense that it's something which we don't necessarily, the person who's passing away, or the person who's passed away, the person who's dead, will not be able to return the chesed to us. It could be, again, in different generations, his descendants may be able to return the chesed, but the person himself, it's a chesed we call chesed shel emes. It's a true chesed, and that you'll find in many of the chevra kaddish events. It's from the Rashi Tevos, gachsha, gimel, shin, chet, aleph. What is gachsha? Right? It's, or gachsha, gimel, chet, shin, aleph. Gmilut chesed shel emet.
Right? So the idea of the sense that that's what a lot of the Chevra Kadisha have this, Mashiach mentions Pashiteva, so Gachsha Gimelas Chasadim Shel Emes. So this is the idea that the mitzvah of Kvura is on the one hand a fulfillment of the requirement of the Torah to return the body to its source, a mitzvah according to some, it's listed as one of the mitzvah d'oraisa of Kvura. At the same time, it's an opportunity for us to also do a kind of chesed with the death. Yeah. Well, there is an issue of cremation in that cremation is a violation of this mitzvah of kavura. Okay, if we deal with tases and lotases, right? I don't know that there's a lotase violated, but as a person who, since there is a mitzvah, as a person who will not put on tefillin, a person who will not take lulav, a person who will not listen to shofar, he is negating the mitzvah. So by doing cremation, and he's a violating, negating this mitzvah of kvura, and furthermore, there's another aspect, and that is considered the issue of bizayon hames. All right, the idea of that, the Gemara has an interesting discussion: who is the kvura for? Is it for the person himself? Is it for the relatives? And there's an aspect of both. Therefore, there is this issue of bizayon. The cremation is ultimately bizayon for the mace as well, in addition to a violation of this idea. Furthermore, and this ties into other issues, if you take a look, thank you. Okay, if you go back a little bit, the kolbo on the top, number three, there are two. The kolbo gives two reasons for the idea of kvura. One, as we mentioned, to show proper respect, since the neshama has been housed in the guf, and the guf has been serving the body for these last number of decades. A person's health were to be destroyed, a person would grieve and would feel terrible, try to show respect, and therefore similarly we have to show acknowledgement to the body which has served as the source for the body. And furthermore, and this is another aspect which again cremation is very much hashkafically against, this idea, the idea of the significance of the human being, the significance of the soul, the realization that a person is eternal. You have something which is worthless, you have something which is, you burn it. You have something of value, you have something which the person, the neshama, continues eternally. You take the body and the idea of tchiyas was also the idea of tchiyas hamesim, right? The idea ultimately, the significance of the idea of the neshama being eternal is the belief in tchiyas hamesim. And therefore, putting the body, burying the body, a way of, I don't want to say quite preserving the body, we don't mummify, okay, but the idea of burning is when you want to destroy something completely, when you're trying to eradicate something, you burn it. And therefore the idea of cremation, and again is going against this idea of the belief in tchiyas hamesim, because by doing so you're basically negating the body and making two actions, nothing is difficult about Kodesh Baruch Hu, but in terms of your own actions, you are negating the idea of Tchiyas HaMeisim. Tchiyas HaMeisim will occur anyway, but as far as our contribution towards allowing it, so therefore the mitzvah of Kvura. Okay, now, this is as far as the Kvura itself. What about the mitzvah of Levaya? Of accompanying the mace on his way. Now, just if I can just jump to the mitzvah, to the second source, what is the word? We talk about the word of Levaya. What does the word of Levaya mean? And let me just also toss in as well, you'll find in Eretz Yisrael the Beit Kvaros that are referred to as Beit Almin. If you pass by Yisodot or any other yeshuv, you'll see the sign will say Beit Almin, Beit Olam. What does it mean, Beit Olam? And this idea is based on a pasuk in Koheles, in Perek Yudbet. At the end, where it talks about the person's being cognizant of the significance of life in the world, it says then ki holech ha'adam el beit. This is the mitzvah of Levaya source too. Ki holech ha'adam el beit olamo v'savu bashuk hasofdim. Holech ha'adam el beit olamo. Again, this is a very, very important hashkafic aspect, which when dealing with the Levaya, the recognition that the person is moving on to another world. That's what the person passed away from his life in this world, but his life
the person's, the neshama, is not ending. The person is walking, is going to another place. There's a very famous sefer about Hilchos, the Ma'avar Yabok, okay, which refers about the idea of the Ma'avar Yabok. It's crossing a channel, crossing a bridge. The idea of the neshama, this is a passage from one world to the other world. And therefore, when we talk about the mitzvah of levaya, of accompanying, the idea is very much understood. Ki holech ha'adam levayet olamo. If the person is now being taken from one world to the other, accompanying the body, the mitzvah of levaya is not just physically walking with the coffin, or the bed, the stretcher, but we are essentially accompanying the person to the world to come through going along with him. And the idea is that this is, since the neshama is eternal, and that's the idea. Ki olech adam el beit olamo, right? Until the tchias hameisim, until the time of tchias hameisim, the place, the cemetery where the person will be buried, will be his beit olamo. This is the time where our life in this world is transient. Our life in this world is whatever people should live on may have asim, but even it's only 12 decades. Right? Whereas for there are people who, hopefully that Mashiach will come after Tchias HaMeisim, less than 120 years. But the idea of Beit until that age, until that time, the base Kvaros is a base Olam. Therefore, the mitzvah of Levaya is accompanying the Mason in his transition to there. And this is a tremendous, tremendous chesed. We find the Mishnah in Peah, just going back to source number one there. Which we're familiar from davening. In davening, we amended a little bit. El dvam shnamachel pratem balam hazeh. Vakaran kemet lalam habad. These are things that a person gets the fruit of the mitzvah in this world, but still has the principle of the mitzvah of the world to come. Kibud avayim, ug milut chasadim, vavaat shalom bin adam lachavaro, v'tamut kulam. Right? The mitzvah here in davening, we add a few more things, which are elaboration of gemilut chasadim. The kavura levaya is a part of mitzvah of gemilut chasadim, as we mentioned earlier. Right, so this is just important, I think, to reflect upon the idea that our belief in the requirement for kavura, the mitzvah of levaya, of accompanying, are expressions of very, very deep and fundamental Jewish beliefs in the value of the person, the value of the soul, the eternity of the soul, the worth of the person, not like an animal that is just simply disposed of, but the person is buried in a respectable manner, all expressions of the significance of mankind. So I'd like to focus now just to go through a little bit more in a pragmatic sense what happens at the Levaya. I think everyone here has attended Levayas, but sometimes still there are certain points which are not always clear. The first, usually depending on wherever the Levaya is, usually the Chevra Kadisha usually takes care of the niftar before the levaya begins, right? And whatever, whether it be in the hospital, in the morgue, and wherever it will be. Sometimes, depending in extreme rare situations, especially if the body has been brought over from overseas in a rush situation, you can have some situations where the Chevra Kadisha still may have some things they have to take care of at the Beit Levayot. But usually, I remember this one morning there where there was. Something there where they still had to do a bunch of things, and it took quite a long time till they found everything. But okay, usually the mate comes with the Chevra Kadisha prepared, and already the Tara has already been done. We're not going to deal with that. I just want to also mention a lot of what I'm saying is a wonderful sefer that came out a number of years ago in Hebrew, Me'olam Va'ad Olam, by Rav Gavriel Goldman. Which on Hilchos Avelos, but it's very, 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 very user-friendly, very, very practical. Discuss a little both Hashgafa and Hacha. Also a lot of just simply pragmatic issues, how to deal with Bituach Lumi, very, very pragmatic, a manual when needed. What? It's probably easier to read. Geshachim has a benefit that it's shorter, so in that sense it's easier here. But the reading is probably easier over here.
Right, so the body is born, is brought by the Chevra Kadisha. Usually they'll just take into a back room to do whatever last minute arrangements they need to do, and then they'll call the family for Kriya and Tziduk Hadin. Kriya, technically speaking, the Gemara really indicates Kriya should have been earlier. A person, really the proper time for Kriya is when a person at the time, if the person is attending at the time of death, the person is supposed to do the Kriya. Or if a person wasn't attending, when he hears the news, the person, because that's the moment of the initial shock, is the time that the person hears this tremendous news, is the time that really would be the optimal time, and that really is a time that the Kriya should be done. For various reasons, the practice became, especially in Ashkenazi Kinla, to do the Kriya at the time of the Levaya. And that's why you find. The ripping of the garment is done usually at the time of the Levaya. What? Let's put it this way. In principle, it's better, but one of the things that the idea of minhag is something which is very, very strongly considered in all these issues of kvura. And therefore, to the extent that the minhag is now to do it at the time of the minhag now is to do it at the time of at the levaya, I assume probably it would be preferable a person to follow the minhag. What? He mentioned that the svardim is to do after the levaya. After the levaya, the Ashkenazim do it at the very, very beginning of the funeral funeral process. I saw a quote: the svardim do it after the levaya. It's written now. It's a modern sif. What? Mm-hmm. Right. So that's what at the very, very beginning when the family come to see the very, very beginning of the funeral. Different.
Yeah.
Right. So as I said. Okay. So again, I don't know. I saw a quarter that's fine. Do it after the funeral. I don't. London. Right. Right, so I don't know. So I don't, yeah.
When a person hears about death, what brought them any
what are they supposed to say? Right. So here again, we're at the. In addition to. At that same time, the bracha for any bad news, and particularly in this situation of a death of a person is the bracha of Baruch Dayan HaEmes. Okay, yeah. And that's what you have in source number 3 here. What? Right, okay. The idea of the bracha, take a minute, we'll come. As far as David's question, as far as the Shem Hashem, so this again is probably, in principle, it would be appropriate to make Shem Hashem for relatives beyond the immediate relatives. If a person experiences the tremendous sad feeling of the bad news, lemais, the practice I think again has evolved that it's limited to the people who are the immediate relatives who are at least with Shem Hashem. For the relatives who are the immediate relatives who will be involved in the shiva, I think would be the only ones who would say the dynamis with Shem Hashem. And again, this comes back to what we said earlier. In principle, this should be said, the bracha really should have been said when the person gets the news. Okay? However, again, the practice has been to sort of standardize it, could be whether it be because not everybody knew how to say the bracha, it could be because some people didn't know the version, so again, it sort of became standardized to incorporate the Dayan HaEmes at the time of the Kfura, just sort of as a bit of a parallel, the Dayan HaEmes is sort of the contrast to the Shehecheyanu, which you say for getting new things. In principle, the Shehecheyanu is supposed to say when we buy the new item, Okay, a person buys a new item of clothing, in principle the bracha should be said when buying the item. Nonetheless, the practice has evolved to not to when first buying it, but rather when actually using it, when putting on the clothing for the first time, when eating the first fruit, not when just seeing it. And therefore, sort of as a parallel, the dynamis, which is almost the flip side of the Shehecheyanu, is also sort of standardized at the time of the Levaya, and therefore it's usually put together with the Kriya. The Chevra Kadisha, either someone from the Chevra Kadisha or the Rav who's leading the funeral or someone else, will generally take care of the Kriya at the very, very beginning of the funeral process. And at that time, after doing the Kriya, generally the person will say the Bracha of Dayan HaEmes, and at the same time also we'll get to the idea of Tzidik HaDin, is also a short Tzidik HaDin is also said at that time. As far as the issue of Dayan HaEmes, so this is based on a Gemara in Masechet Brachos, which points out Chayav Adam Avarech Al Hara'a Keshem Shum Avarech Al HaTova. Obligation which is somewhat difficult to do, but a person, ultimately it again reflects on something very, very deep in our relationship with God. We generally praise people, thank people for good things. For things that are bad, if someone were to hit you, you don't generally praise him, you don't generally thank him, and you don't generally praise him, oh, you're so great that you slapped me in the face. Alright? And yet we say here that a person has to make a bracha and praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Avavta Hashem Akecha B'chol Avcha U'b'chol Nafshecha U'b'chol Modecha, as Mishnah says, B'chol Mida U'mida Shumodeid Lecha, whatever measure he deals you, Heve modelo b'maod mod. The person has to be grateful and thankful to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, regardless of the situation. At the same time, again, it quotes here from Rav Kook that we don't find that it's the same bracha. A person has to be aware there are things that appear to us as good and appear to us as bad. Therefore, we can't make the same bracha. We do need to have a bracha of Dayan HaEmes when experiencing the tzad, the midas hadin, we feel the justice and the difficulty, we have a bracha, and we have for happy things, we have a shechianu, and we have a tova meitiv. We have to be aware of the difference. At the same time, when we go down to the root of things, we have the belief in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is doing what is ultimately the best for us. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is being fair, and although sometimes in life things sometimes seem very unfair, and why me? Why did this happen? Ultimately, believe there is a reason for it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is doing what is best, and that's what stands behind this idea of the bracha, a way of expressing our belief that with all the difficulty we may have, with all the difficulty we have in understanding what is happening, how could this be? Nonetheless, we accept and we praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu even in this state, and that's the idea of the Tzidduk HaDin as well, emptying that we accept HaKadosh Baruch Hu's justice as a true justice, the one that we accept upon us. Right. Right. The Gemara says that a person who receives an inheritance of significance from his parents, from the parents, so he has to make also a Shehecheyanu on having received inheritance. I don't think this is said simultaneously at the same time as the Levaya. I think it probably should be separated and said at a different. I haven't noticed it, and again, I don't know, and I guess those depends what the depends on inheritance, and maybe it could also be this may go back to what we discussed earlier. For a person to actually receive an inheritance nowadays is quite a time lag. Okay, until he goes through whatever legal proceedings, right? It's not like the good old days when the minute someone died, so now the house is, right? And now the property is their inheritance. He still has quite a process, quite a grueling process sometimes to go through until they're actually able to get the estate. So the Shehecheyanu is not quite, it's not appropriate to make the Shehecheyanu yet because the Shehecheyanu we haven't got to. Perhaps when he finally finishes all the legal proceedings, then, you know, he finally takes possession of whatever property it was. Okay, at that point, I guess it would be person who made the Shehecheyanu at that point. All right, so this is basically pretty much at the very, very beginning of the at the funeral process. Generally the individuals, the avelim, go sometimes at the front of the room, sometimes within the back room, and do the kriya, do the dayan ha'emes, and the tziduk hadin. While waiting around, okay, there's always an issue. Sometimes they either call the levaya for whatever time, depending on where the levaya, where the niftar is coming from, especially if it's coming from overseas. So, you know, they can expect the plane to come at whatever time, they call the levaya for whatever time. The plane may have gotten delayed, there may have been traffic coming from Tel Aviv or whatever. So sometimes there's lag time until things are ready to go underway. A person just has to also just be cognizant of the fact that if they're waiting in a Beis Kavaros is a place in which, I don't know, we have to say the person has to be sad or morose there, but there is a certain avira in a Beis Kavaros. A person should not be around, you know, giving Shalom Aleichem to everybody and greeting everybody in the Beis Kavaros. It's kind of a disrespectful to the environment of the Beis Kavaros to go around being overly joyous and the Shalom Aleichem to that person has to come there with a sort of a kind subdued, perhaps the word subdued I think would be an appropriate kind of verb. A person, basically, person has to have a contemplative, subdued sense of emotion, even while waiting for the funeral to begin. After having done this, generally begins the time period for Hespedim, or saying Tehillim. The Gemara in Masechah Sanhedrin has a fascinating discussion. Who is the Hesped for? Is the Hesped sort of for the benefit? Is it out of respect for the person who passed away? The person just left. This person, we're lacking him. Right? Is it appropriate when a person is leaving the world to show our appreciation of him? To honor him, is it best to honor the person, or maybe it's also primarily for them to be able to share their respect, or for them to be able for the people alive to show that the significance of who their ancestors were. If the Gemara has that discussion amongst the issues that are raised, of what happens if a person leaves in his tzava in his will that he doesn't want to have hespedim, he asks that there shouldn't be hespedim. Is it up to him? Who is it up to? Or conversely, what happens if, you know, the flip side, if the avelim decide they don't want to bother with it, you know, they don't want to bother with hespedim? Do they have a response? I'm sorry?
The doctor said what that word was.
The eulogies. Okay? Is there an obligation if families don't want to bother having eulogies, or if it's expensive to have, you know, do they need to hire a... Do they need to pay money for the funeral home to have, you know, to have the eulogies, or is it just, you know, it's for us? Who is it for? And then we'll ultimately come to the conclusion that primarily it's for the purpose of the person himself, and therefore, if the person for the niftar. Okay, right. David
is raising another issue, and that is that there are days which are days that are basically joyful days, pretty much days that we don't say Tachnun on, okay, which is quite a list. By the time you add up all the days, and you have basically all of Chodesh Nisan, you have the first two thirds of Chodesh. You have the middle half. Of Chodesh Nisan, you have the first half of Chodesh, basically all around Sukkot. You have the first half of Sivan, which is all around Shavuos. Okay, so that's 2 months there between the month of Nisan, half of Tishrei, and half of Shavuos. You already have two full months.
And of course, then you have Hanukkah, Purim, and Rosh Chodesh, and many other days, including, according to many Poskim, also Friday afternoons. Okay, so here it is. Just for us, sometimes they try to get Leviathan even Friday afternoons, if time is of a person passed Friday morning. So in general, has paid them or limited, are generally not done on days when we don't say on happy days, on say Tachman. There is a very interesting question. If in fact the Hespedim are for the benefit of the mace, so why should that be negated by the fact that it's a happy day, which is more relevant for us? Any?
It's still a neshama. Doesn't the neshama still partake in the happy days?
Okay, so it could be, so perhaps it could be that the neshama still has that the neshama is also experiencing the joy of the day, and therefore for him also, for the niftar, it's also Nisan. Okay, Phil says, okay, it's also the neshama, it's also Yom Tov. What? Okay, we talked about this idea that for Shabbos to turn off the fires and all right. So that's one thing. Another thing which I think is also an issue which I think needs to be considered is that there are, we talk about individual and community, and that I think is also an aspect here that we have here although that mitzad the niftar this is a very significant sad event. But we have, at the flip side, the nation, the people as a whole, this is a time of joy. And therefore, we're not going to let the individual, the needs of an individual, impinge upon the celebration of the community. Which is, for example, the same reason we talk about, say, even as far as the Avelus. When you have a Yom Tov, people don't, a person dies during Chol HaMoed, during Yom Tov, he doesn't sit Shiva until after the Yom Tov, because his individual avelos, the avelos that he's experiencing, is an individual issue. He's part of a whole community. And therefore, since the whole community, Am Yisrael, is happy during the Yom Tovim, it's inappropriate for an individual to be expressing his personal grief at a time of a communal. Therefore, I think it's also part of the issue over here, that since these are days that are days of joy for all of Klal Yisrael, therefore, the individual hespet is sort of put somewhat to the wayside. Right. In the case of Avilut, it's 7 days after Yom Tov. Okay. After Yom Tov, it starts. So you can have a person. So you have a situation. Let's say, you can have really a long gap. Let's say, for example, if someone were to pass away just before Sukkot, and they couldn't get they couldn't arrange the funeral, before Sukkot. I'm saying if let's say the person died late afternoon Erev Sukkot. I'm trying to get the extreme example. If a person were to die late afternoon Erev Sukkot and they didn't have a chance to do the burial before Sukkot, so they won't bury him till on Sukkot, okay? The Shiva will be delayed till after Simchas Torah, and then there'll be a full week of Shiva after. The funeral will be on Chol HaMoed. The funeral will be on Chol HaMoed, or Matzei Yom Tov for Chol HaMoed, right? But the funeral, the Shiva won't begin until after Simchas Torah, a full week or more later, until the Shiva actually begins. In Chutz La'aretz, there is a slight, call it a leniency, that the last day there, we have Yom Tov Sheni, so the last day of Yom Tov Sheni does count as one of the 7 days. I could say, every Yom Tov is double. So the second day, which is not really, minug additional day, so that counts in Chutz La'aretz. But in Eretz Yisrael, we don't have that extra double day, so the Avelus doesn't begin till after the Yom Tov. Okay, that takes us now, and I guess that ties into what we just mentioned. We also, I think it's very important to think about what the idea, what the point of a hesped is. The point of a hesped is not a chance for the Rav to show off his his ability to deliver a you know, to deliver his rhetoric and then the sermon. It's not the point of a hesped. What is the real point of a hesped? So if we look in source 4b, okay, with Shulchan Aruch writes, it's interesting that to find this in the Shulchan Aruch. Okay, he says mitzvah gedola laspid al hamet karoi, that there's a very, very big mitzvah to give a proper eulogy for the mace. What is the idea? Umitzvato. What is the mitzvah of giving a hesped? What is the idea of giving a eulogy? Shiarim kolo, to raise in a voice. Lomar alav dvarim hameshabrim et halev, to mention things that break the heart. The point, part of the levaya, part of the, sometimes, especially if people have been very close, people are elderly, have been married for many years, children, okay, and sometimes they break out crying tremendously during a levaya, and that's perfectly appropriate. These are the two aspects of a hesped. One, laharbot bechia, to make people feel the emotional loss, to bring them to tears. And two, lahaskir shivcho, to talk in praise of the person, to have us understand the significance of the loss, to have us understand the greatness of the person who passed away. At the same time, it says here, "Va'asur lahaflig b'shivcho yoter midai." A person should not exaggerate too much. Oh, this person was the biggest tzaddik, and this person was the biggest masman, and this person was the biggest family person, this person was the biggest baal tzedakah on this person. Right. A person shouldn't exaggerate too much. Elamaz kirin midot tovot shibo. We mentioned the positive traits of the person, and interestingly, umosifim bohem ktsat. It's acceptable to add a little bit. Right? The fact that here he didn't do this, the fact that he didn't do this, the fact that he didn't do this, we can overlook that. Right? The fact that he didn't give that much, we can add a little bit. That's also acceptable. Right? To make people feel perhaps that, yeah, why is that? You know, why are we allowed to exaggerate a little bit? Perhaps the idea could be that we assume every Jewish person would have liked to do a little more than he did, and for whatever reason wasn't able to do so, but he would have liked to, if were he not constrained by whatever realities he was in. Each person probably would have been liked to dedicate more time, would have liked to give greater donations, would have liked to spend more time, and therefore a little bit we can, if we talk about what the person would have liked to lead his life, or I think it's certainly fair to say each person would have done a little bit more, and therefore that's perhaps why we allow exaggerating a little bit. However, he says, "Rak shelo yaflig," but don't go off the deep end. Don't say things that are exaggerated. Vimlohi bo midot tovot klal. Hard to think this about a Jewish person. Person has nothing. Lo yaskir alav. Don't make up. As we're saying here, a levaya, a hesped, has to be genuine. It has to be real. Has to have basis in reality. I can't make up things that, you know, this person never gave a penny to charity. You can't start calling and talking about him, about, you know, the supporter of the shul, if he never, if he never gave anything. But a little bit is acceptable. Right? V'chacham v'chassid, maskim l'chochmatam v'chassidutam. Obviously, a person who is a great talmid chacham, a person who is a great chassid, so then we have to mention that. V'kol maskil mishelo hayabukal, someone who mentions something which is simply not true, osho masif laflig yoter midah amashe, well, someone exaggerates too much, goreim ra'ala, I think, well, look, but I'm still giving cover to the mace, look, I'm saying nice things about him, people think wonderful things about him, says that's not good, goreim ra'ala atzmo v'lameit, that's not good neither for him nor for the mace, because ultimately we also have to, and this I think is a theme which we have to again mention, because this is really a very critical theme for the whole idea of levaya. This person is passing on from this world. He's about to sit before the Kisei HaKavod and to be judged by HaKadosh Baruch Hu for his life. And if we start saying, you know, this person did A and he did B and he did C and he was wonderful, and suddenly he finds himself standing before the judgment day, before God's throne, And, you know, someone comes in and says, you know, I was told that you did this, this, and other thing, and the other angel comes in and says, what in the world are you talking about? Okay? Where? You know, bring your receipts. You know? And therefore, to make up things, I think, is sort of puts a, in addition, is putting both the niftar and the person himself in a position, which is not good. And therefore, hesped is one which is meant to be to raise crying, to arouse crying, to touch an emotional chord. Okay, and that's hard to do. Right? Some people are very good. A lot of times we try to weave in worlds of Divrei Torah or especially Divrei Musar. What can we learn from this person? I think is also, because part of the idea of the Leviyah also is one of the schus for the Niftar is that if the person will have an impact on the person, and sometimes going to a Leviyah, when you hear about a person, right, sometimes people may not have known the person so much, especially if the person goes to a Leviyah, not because he knows so much the person, he knew the person's son, he knew the person's daughter, he knew the person's relative, he's someone who somewhat works, but sometimes people go to Leviyah, they really didn't have close contact with that person himself, with the Nifta himself, but nonetheless, when a person goes and a person hears about the lifestyle, is inspired by the person, and the person can take home a message and apply it in his own life, okay, that itself is a tremendous schus for the niftar. And therefore, the idea of the hesped is A, to touch an emotional chord, to make people feel the loss, and B, to talk about the shevach of the niftar, A, as a yikard Shekhvei, as giving him honor, and also serving as a schus for the niftar, that through talking about his positive traits, and people can be inspired through him, and if people take a lesson home, and therefore improve their own lives, that improvement in their own lives is also a schus for the niftar. So this is the idea of the hesped. And this also is, perhaps as Esther mentioned, another reason that we don't do it on happy days is because we don't want to bring the people, since the idea of a hesped is to bring people to crying, we don't want to do that on these days. Therefore, what's generally done, okay, is people, even on days when we don't have hespedim, so some take it literally, they just say a perek tehillim, and that's it. Many communities, many places, they don't want to suffice just with that. So they say divrei preda, brief words of, is translated divrei preda. What? Yeah, words of separation to say sort of a farewell, a brief farewell to the person. And again, here, what is the primary difference between divrei hesped and that is again this issue of less focusing on the emotional cord, not trying to arouse crying, because that's the idea. On these days, we're not trying to arouse the public to cry. We talk briefly about the person, express some of his positive traits, let's learn something from him, and we try to keep it more on that tone rather than a tone of encouraging crying. After the hespedim, then generally the Leviyah begins. Often there's a Kaddish after the hespedim. And then the funeral procession begins. People leave the funeral chapel wherever it was, and usually the leader says, quotes the Mishnah from Avos of Akavya ben Mahalalel. The person Akavya ben Mahalalel omer istakel b'shlosha dvarim v'yat haba de avira. Person, one of the ways a person keeps the focus on life is to consider where he came from, where he's going, what ultimately will happen, and that's a way, and that's again appropriate for this time. For a person has to says that one of the main benefits for a person who goes to a funeral is v'hachai yitain el libo, a chance for a person to reflect, a chance for a person to contemplate, a chance for a person to think about his own life. You know, in one of the books, you know, talk about the book, you know, Seven Ways to Be Successful, or Seven Habits, whatever. And in these books, they talk about if you want to set your life on a proper direction, sort of write your own eulogy. Right? I say, write your own eulogy. What do you want? You know, what would you like people to be saying about you? Think about what's important. Okay. And if a person thinks what he would like to be said, Achamev Esim, what he would like to have been said about him, what he considers valuable in life, and what he would like to be known for, and then a person can think, well, what can I do to try to live up to this ideal that I set for myself? And therefore, a lot of times through going to a Levaya, person hears other Hespedim, and hears about other people, and hears what is valued ultimately. Yeah. But you're talking about to write a will, to be given over to write. Right.
To write, yeah, right. Now, discussing that.
Right.
Right.
Right. Well, why wait till then? Why should they have to wait until then to hear about it if you want to? Okay. Right. So this is what Rav Kaveh Mehalal says. A person has to think where he's coming from. A person begins life as a speck of nothing. Ultimately, a person also ends his life being put back into the ground. Okay. What happens in between the speck from which he began and the ultimate decomposition in which he will become? What was of significance is basically of his actions, and therefore the fact, and for which he will ultimately give din v'cheshbon. He'll have to give a stand and justice before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Therefore, with these thoughts, the funeral process begins, and the leader says this phrase. And in many communities, there's also the idea of breaking, taking a piece of pottery and sort of breaking it on the doorstep. There are also a couple of ideas. What's the idea behind that? So a few reasons. One of them is one expression of like kaparos, a kind of hapach nishbar, the snare is broken, v'anachon nivlatnu. So in a certain sense, the death is a kind of a kaparo, that we should say that by breaking this, whatever may have should be happening to the family, shouldn't be happening. Perhaps it's also a way of sort of emphasizing this idea of the separation of the guf and the neshama, by having sort of the guf is being broken, releasing the neshama to go further. So this is some of the ideas behind this idea of the shvaskaras. Those who have been to funerals in the Yerushalayim area, or even in the Beit Shemesh, where they try to follow the Yitzchayim, the Meir Yerushalayim, there is a very, very strong minhag in Yerushalayim not to have descendants follow the bed of a man. The idea of this seems sometimes strange. Chutzlarts, they don't seem to have this minhag so much. That not for a funeral of a man, not to have the descendants follow the bed. So in some places they don't go at all. Okay, let's say I went to the Levayat, I was at the when Rav Yeshua Neufert passed away. So before they began walking, so that the Levayat, before they began walking, they made an announcement that the descendants don't go at all. Very, very, you know, explicit. That's the right. What? What? They don't go to the Beis Kvaros. They don't follow the actual procession. They stay behind. They don't. The immediate descendants, as the brothers, yes, the spouses, the descendants. Like the descendants can also be grandchildren. It could be also children and great grandchildren. What is the idea? The idea behind this is the idea that when a person passes away, so the neshama departs from the body. The body becomes a void of kedusha. We all know a vacuum. Nature abhors a vacuum, and when there's a vacuum, things try to come and fill in the void. The same thing applies on a spiritual realm as well. Right? The body, the soul, provided a sense of kedusha in the body. The neshama departs, so therefore there's a spiritual void in the body. Spiritual void in the body is an invitation for all kinds of ruchos, raos, klipos, demons, whatever whatever negative spiritual forces there are, now that the positive spiritual force of the neshama has departed from the body, so therefore there's room, now that there's a void, for negative spiritual forces to come and inhabit the body and disturb the and disturb it. These are covered. What? Again, and this is a point I mentioned. There are Kabbalistic ideas.
Really?
What?
Really?
Again, there are one of the things, obviously.
The bigger the person, the bigger the neshama was, the bigger the void, the bigger the demons that could come along and fill it, and therefore the, you know, amazing resemblance should be near it.
Well, I mean, there is, what? No, not for the family. Okay, not for the family. It's the nifta. It's for the nifta. One of the ideas which leads to a lack of kedusha and hence for these forces to come is the violation of keri, is a violation of releasing seed unnecessarily, not in the context of family relations. And as such, descendants, the potential loss of life, is also a source of tumah and a source of many potential things that were created through the violation of having released seed, not in the context of family relations. And that's why the descendants, that's why it's only for a man, and that's why it's only the immediate descendants who are sort of raised that issue. Just look, this is your son, your daughter, your grandchild, your great-grandchild. Just think how many additional children or other the grandchildren or great grandchildren you could have had, and therefore that itself becomes a kind of something which can then be a source of again, we don't see it with our own eyes, but the whole idea of the passage of person going from one world to another, all of the funeral is half issues of this world and half issues of the world to come, which we don't necessarily experience. That's the idea behind this minhag. What's done in many places nowadays, not to make the family feel completely out of it, is they'll go ahead, the relatives will be able to go ahead, not to follow the niftar, but just to go ahead and sort of, not as part of the procession, but to go ahead and wait there already ahead of time. And that's what's often done in many situations nowadays. Okay? For those who don't want to completely feel out of it, I tell them don't walk the rest of possession, but go ahead. So as I mentioned, this is done in Yerushalayim much more strongly, Eretz Yisrael less, Chutz Haaretz not so much so, and what's often done nowadays is kind of pshara of having the descendants sort of go ahead, not as part of the funeral procession. Okay, as far as women in the Beis Kavaras is, again, there are, in general, it's not encouraged for, Beis Kavaras is a place of Beis Kavaras, all right? People go to Beis Kavaras, and we have to. We go there for if there's a levaya. When there's a shloshim, when there's a yortzeit, when there's an askara, and that's our semei. When we go there, semei tshuva. There's a minute to go. But Beis Kavaras is not a. It's a place of tumah. It's a place of where all talk about klipos. It's a place of death. And Judaism is a religion of life. In general, it's not encouraged to go excessively, to go unnecessarily to a funeral. There are various minhagim in terms of women in particular about their going to the Beis HaKvaros. It's not necessarily encouraged. Some women, especially if they're pregnant, have the meganatu. There are a lot of minhagim here. Lamaisa feels she wants to go, she can go. But you should be aware that there are different minhagim. There are certain communities in which women do try to limit their involvement in going to a Beis HaKvaros. And certainly, what? I'm saying even at a funeral, there are certain, right. So what that means is, let's see, for as follows. If a person feels close, it goes. But just the fact that I happen to know someone who, I wouldn't necessarily rush, to encourage a woman, right. I'm saying it's not for anyone in general, but there's also, you have to always balance this with the kavod of the mace. So I'm just saying, I think, regards for women, since there are various minhagim, which you discourage, a woman who doesn't feel a real, a woman who is much more, just a very, very loose connection, okay?
Just to clarify, just to understand, you're saying that for women, that but for men, it's not,
I said, for me, I said, but I'm what?
For a man, it's not an issue.
It's less. There's less of an issue. It's less of an issue. There's less to consider also, but there, I think there's much more the benefit of being a part of it. Would, even if a person is not closely connected, I think would usually outweigh. I'm just saying, given that there are various practices of our women, if a woman is, you know, is considering, should I go, should I not go, is it really necessary, is it not really necessary, I think there's more room, given all the various minhagim, to, you know, to err in the way of a person is not sure. If a person wants to go, she can go. But if she's debating anyway, you know, should I go, should I not go, you know, if she won't go, it's not the end of the world either, because there are numerous minhagim, how proper, you know. At the same time, when being there, it's important to, although that's a time of people's minds are presumably on important issues of life, to maintain tznius at the time of the levaya also, and therefore, even when walking the procession, there should try to be some sort of degree of separation, just be one big mixture of everybody throng going together. They should try to have some sort of separation of the men walking. The men will walk in, there shouldn't be one tremendous mixture. It's a little bit hard to impart this, but there should be awareness that, you know, there's room for tznius even at a levaya. Yeah, go ahead. That's what we hear.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
Okay. What is the menhag in this community or these communities around here about women going specifically if they are either a person who is a relative, or
as I said, I think in general people usually go, but I said if a person is debating, you know, they don't feel a tremendously close connection, you know, they don't.
I said relative or friend of the family.
So then the general practice, right, then generally the practice is to go.
There aren't communities here where women are excluded.
Generally not. I think in the communities here, I assume not.
Okay,
I assume
like
not.
The Edgeware,
right?
Our community, the rule is that women weren't allowed to the ground.
Uh-huh.
So, which didn't deal well with anybody at all, and was like there was a big problem.
I don't think. What? It depends on the kilot. I don't think I've really seen women were completely excluded. The two things that I said, I think the two things that one, I don't think that tznius should be observed. People shouldn't mingle, you know, unnecessarily. And two is that, as I said, because there are all these issues that a beis kvaros is a place not of life but a place of death, and it seems Kabbalistic women are some more susceptible to this. Perhaps it goes back to the fact of Chet of Chav, who, on account of the Chet of Eitz Hadas, death came into the world. So there's room for a woman if she's not erring in which way. I think there's more room for a woman to err in the way of not going than necessarily of going. Whereas a man will probably err in the way of going than of not going.
But as a female mourner, there's no exclusion.
No. No, I'm not aware of. I'm not aware. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. So there are.
Well, the
primary issue is the beis kvaros, right? I'm talking primarily about into the area where the beis kvaros is, because that's where the, you know, we talked about the tumah. Yeah, that's where you have this tumah and these whatever negative forces. So they want to come to right. If they come to the here, there's paden. That's right. Okay. Along the way, usually the there are a couple of stops for the avel to say Yoshe B'Seser or Eishes Chayil, and after there are a few stops along the way for the person, for the avelim to say Kaddish along the way. It was said because you were Kohanim. The mace went up this way, and you went out the other way. So yes, Kaddish was said. Yes, Kaddish was said along the way. Yes, Kaddish was said along the way by other people. Okay, all right. As far as the kavura, okay, that's one of the differences. Those who are here, who attend the burial here for the first time, and they're a bit of a shock often. In a chutzaretz, people are buried in a casket. Here, they're basically wrapped, usually just wrapped in a talis, and put into the ground. That way, it's sometimes shocking the first time a person sees it. When putting the body in, typically said again, if it's a day where we say the Yud Gimel Midos, since the burial is a kapara, right, the chiperat matamo, that serves as a source of atonement for the person, therefore it's appropriate to say the Yud Gimel Midos Arachim Hashem Hashem Kerachom Vachanun at the time putting the burial in. Generally, the feet are placed towards Yerushalayim. Okay, I guess a way of saying the belief, expressing our belief in Tchias HaMeisim, that the person should be up and ready to roll to greet Mashiach in Yerushalayim. Okay, the mace is covered. Usually they have sort of cement blocks that they first cover, and part of the idea is to leave a certain degree of airspace above the body, so therefore the tumah will be blocked by that airspace and won't actually go higher up. And after they put the cement blocks across, then it's filled in. It's a mitzvah person to participate in the levaya, in the kavura, and carrying the mace. At the same time, a person shouldn't make a fight about it. One of my wife's sisters, when she was going out, someone was boasting, he was at a kvura of so-and-so, of one of these great gedolim, and he pushed his way through to be able to actually hold the, you know. And, what? Yeah. Krovim should participate. Yeah. It's better, yeah. Well, because that's, you know, Krovim, people, whoever can has a chance to participate in actually filling in the grave with earth. That's the mitzvah of Kvura. Interesting, I once had a chance, just talking to the person Beit Shemesh, who unfortunately I've been there quite a number of times for various. There's a, like, I think, a very good person who leads the Kvura in Beit Shemesh in. And at one point, the Chevra Kadisha were doing a lot of it. I said, you should tell the Chevra Kadisha that they should let the people participate. And he said, that's interesting, because there are times that sometimes the people say, how come we pay the Chevra Kadisha, why aren't they, why aren't you doing your job? So it's a balance. So people have to give the message that they would like to participate in doing the burying. The practice is not to hand the shovel one to another, so like you don't want to hand over, quote unquote, bad things. You don't want to hand over tzaros to somebody else. So you fill in a couple of things up there, and then put that shovel down. Let someone else have the chance to do the mitzvah. After that, they generally put some levinim, some of the bricks around to sort of mark off the rectangle of the kever. In certain communities, again, there's a Kabbalistic issue of doing hakafos around again to get rid of the various klipos, to get rid of the various evil forces. That since the mess again is on his way to a world of to the afterworld, which we don't know much about, but based on Kabbalistic sources, there are various hakafos to ward off, to protect, to sort of a protective wall around the neshama as it goes to the world to come. There's a brief tzidduk hadin, accepting God's justice at the beginning. There's a somewhat longer version of tzidduk hadin, which is usually said at the end. The leader of the funeral usually then asks mechila from the niftar that they've. The leader of the community, the leader of the levaya, generally asks the mechila from the niftar if they haven't. Dealt with him properly, and so we've tried to do our best and couldn't have hug him, please forgive us if in any way we slighted you. After that, the avelos basically take off. That's the once the mace is covered, which the avelos begins, and therefore the people who are sitting shiva, the immediate relatives, take off their shoes. That's an expression, the first expression of avelos, and at that point, after. What? Yeah, they usually take off at the kever usually, or around the kever. What? It depends. Look, it depends on if they're properly equipped and what the terrain is like. Even a person who's in avelos, if he's walking on rocky area and he's going to hurt his feet, he's allowed to wear shoes. But it should be arranged to bring slippers already there, and after the kever is filled in. To take off the shoes, and that's the beginning of the avelos, which is very relevant also if it's late afternoon, Okay, and therefore, if it's late afternoon, and the question when the shiva begins, because the first day is this first day, whether the kvura was at the very beginning of the night, or in the morning, or early afternoon, or late afternoon, or a minute before shkia, or even possibly into Be'erash Mashos. Therefore, especially if it's late afternoon, as soon as the, I remember once a Levaya, which is again late afternoon, and they really rushed to get the body covered by the end of the day, so that way that already counts as day one for the Levaya. And I mentioned the same where Masad Levaya says, it's not just an issue of gaining the day, there's also a preference for having the Kvur during the day. There's a preference for having the Kvur during the day. What? Let's put it this way. Would a person totally skip Hesgeda? There's room to consider reversing the order. There's definitely room to consider doing the Kavura first and then coming back for the Hespedim. I would definitely recommend that, if that were to make the difference. Or to shorten Hespedim, definitely would be appropriate if it, in order to enable the Kavura to be during the day. Okay, so that's a question in terms of when to do the date, establish the date. It needs a balance. It depends how closely they're related, how fast they can get there, and it also depends on the city. It's in Yerushalayim, they're very mappin, much more mappin in Yerushalayim. What? Not anymore? Yeah, in Yerushalayim, they're much more makpid. Esther's father, no? His father passed away, and they didn't wait for the son, the only son. And they didn't wait. I had two sons. And they buried that away without either son there. In Yerushalayim, they're very makpid about leaving. They're very makpid about leaving. What? No, realize that you know, all of life is a balance of, you know, this world, what we observe, what we experience, and okay, that's it. Right. So again, it's if it's generally, let's put it this way, the delay of the kvura should be for the benefit of the deceased person, not for other people's benefits. To the extent that having his relatives present is a benefit for the deceased, then it's acceptable. Right. Okay. In all seriousness, if it will look, you know, if it will be considered disrespectful for the not to have it without the relatives there. Correct. To the extent that there would be.
Why do some communities not do that?
No, because in Yerushalayim there is the need of not leaving a mace overnight, especially in a walled city. There is halachic, and that's why in Yerushalayim they have this, because there's a halacha, there's a much greater halachic mandate in a walled city of not having. Right? Okay, so that's the thing. In principle, it should be. Okay? Okay, after the kfura, basically, the men. What? Again, if they'll take the. Right, if they'll take the mace out of the city, then fine, but they're not going to take the mace out and bring them back in. You're not going to start transporting them around. Okay, so again, after the kvura, generally for the avelim of the men, people make two lines. The men make two lines, and the avelim men walk through. And the people, everyone says hamokim yanachem, as sort of a communal hamokim yanachem. There's the idea of closing the gap afterwards. As the person walks through, we don't want other people following their footsteps, so people sort of just collapse the line after they walk through. For women aveilim, typically shua is not made, mostly for issues of tznius. We don't want to have make a public issue of it, and therefore generally they go to some place and whoever wants to sit around, and usually after the kura, some people want to be menachem aval then because they're already there and they're not necessarily going to have a chance to come at some other point. So therefore generally after that there's a chance to be menachem. So if the men have the possibility of the shura, and the women sort of privately come over and
Because
again, you're trying to be menachem the men. It's that the men should walk in between a line of men and women. It's also not the ultimate in stairs. Right, again, not allowed to, but again, we're not talking here, it's not just an issue of to him go through a whole, flanked by a whole row of, to go to, we're not talking about, there's an issue of having to. On the other hand, to go through a whole line, a whole flank of, to walk from the whole length, flank the whole wide, but I mean, it's also, again, it's not an issue, but it's not as far as, it's not the ultimate in, and we want to have a separation. What? I'm not aware of, right. You know, so the shura is generally done by the men, and the women in more. The women don't have a shura. The women don't have a shura. They sit privately. And whoever wants to, whoever comes and speaks with the female aveilim privately. So then you generally don't do a shura. Don't do a shura. Okay, there are some communities, where if there's a request to do something that feels appropriate, there's what to consider. There's a shura quote from Maria Blazak, but there's room for it, but generally it's not done. Shura is generally done for the men. Netilat Yadayim, three times, like in the morning, and generally it's not, people don't dry their hands, and similarly, the minhag is not to hand over the washing cup, similar to not handing over the shovel, not handing over the washing cup, not, what? What? So the addition of not drying is to sort of let the memory, it's sort of reflective, let the memory linger a little longer. That's sort of the official, the reason given. Let the memory of the niftar linger a little bit. Now you're trying to, get rid of, wash. You don't want to wash your hands of the mace so quickly. You let the memory linger. Okay. So I did see quotes from Shlomo Zalman Auerbach that if you wash the hands a fourth time, then you can dry it. Okay. So if you want to use a towel and dry it, then you should wash your hands a fourth time, then you can do it. Okay. As we mentioned, generally in this Tzantzin Yechom Avelim. The final point, which also is to mention, is that there's a practice in many places of putting a stone when visiting a graveyard, putting a stone as a way of showing that sort of we've been there. That's the burning graffiti, so and so is here, and Tashnayin Gimel. So we put a stone there as a way of flowers, generally not encouraged. Some have raised the issue of Kugos Ha'akum. The Goyim are very much into putting flowers on graves. Therefore, we don't generally encourage. We generally discourage it. It's not the end of the world because there is a reason for it. It doesn't seem to be linked to Avodah Zarah. It's sort of a nice. It's just a nice thing. Therefore, if a person does so. It's not. Don't have to make a fuss about it. But generally, we don't. We discourage putting wreaths on flowers on the grave. One final point, just in terms of this, was an issue which I heard from Rav Marcus from Staten Island. Often, a person's out of base kvaros, he wants to go and see. Well, if I'm ready, let me go visit this one and visit this one and visit this one. This one. So he mentioned to me. There's the question of there's a certain degree here of disrespect to the mace of going to other. Well, as I said, one other. I know we got this probably quotes from Aaron Soloveitchik. One other. It's appropriate to go to one other grave.
You know.
I guess if you're going for a specific, let's say a person going for askara of a specific person, then not to then not to then go to others. You know, a person. No, I don't say no. I'm saying if a person is going to visit, right? So.
If you're going to a Levaya,
right.
You
say it's going to just be one, but okay. So again, let's put it this way. I don't think this is right. So I'm assuming that this is a kind of thing of needs to be balanced. I don't think like it's an issur to go. It's just you're trying to keep the focus and not just say, you know, well, let me toss on the bag. So if there's a significant reason, as you said, if there are two parents there, I would assume that the kibbutz of aim of the two parents would be
we'll.
Right. So again, that's what we're trying to So that's what we're trying to avoid. So these are some of the issues. This is more or less a lot of the issues of the Levaya. And as I mentioned at the beginning, and this is, I think, ultimately again the purpose of going to Levaya is twofold. Number one is to show kavod, as Pnimas Chesed, to the niftar, and two, to take away something positive from it. As it says, V'hachai yitein el libo, person is alive, should take things to heart, and learn from the positive qualities of the person who passed away, incorporate them into his life, so he can live a better life, and that ultimately is the ultimate schus for the niftar, that he has made a positive impact on people.
Okay.